National Council of Jewish Women, Pittsburgh Section, Oral History 2. It's June 18, 1999. The interview, we are interviewing Tessie Binstock. The interviewers are Carol Blyer and Selma Weiss. Would you please tell us your name and address, Tessie, so we can test it?
Tessie Binstock, 128 North Craig Street, Pittsburgh, PA, 15213.
You mentioned that you saw this article in the Post-Gazette about Altoona and about the railroad, and so seeing that you lived there, tell us what you know about the railroad in Altoona.
The railroad, Pennsylvania Railroad, in Altoona was the main industry. And most of the people who lived and worked in Altoona were associated or affiliated in some way with the Pennsylvania Railroad. The high school, Altoona High School, had a special course for boys who wanted to go into the railroad, and they were educated to work in the railroad and guaranteed a job at the end of their high school graduation. Girls were encouraged to go into the secretarial course, or if you any student who planned on going to college could take the academic course. But the railroad was important in that it was father to son who worked in the railroad. The Horseshoe Curve was a scenic spot where everybody went to see the railroad train come around the curve, and the railroad, the train would come from, let's say, Pittsburgh west, going to New York, which would be east, and they would have, and the train would come up around and make a curve, which is the Horseshoe Curve, because that's the way the tracks were. And it was kind of fun to go and watch the train come around the curve. It was a very high plateau where you had to walk up, kind of climb up a very high hill, and to see the train. Since then, of course, there is no Pennsylvania Railroad running through Altoona, PA. The whole town has been changed in that the downtown section, which was 11th Avenue, is now like a mall. Most of the stores have moved out into the suburbs, and the downtown, when I visited the last time, which was about 3 years ago, was very quiet, and the stores that I was familiar with were no longer there. There was a big article in the Pittsburgh Press about Altoona and the railroad, and what has been done is that memorabilia has been collected in a museum of the Pennsylvania Railroad has been built at the Horseshoe Curve. There now is a tram which takes you up to the top of the curve, the Horseshoe Curve, and it has become actually a tourist attraction.
You just mentioned that the railroad divided the town.
Still does.
Yeah. How was it? The business side was on one side?
Well, here. Yeah. Here's the downtown.
Right.
This is the business section. The railroad comes through here like this. On either side of the railroad are the, what would they call them? The big buildings, the repair buildings. It was,
right.
Water. That's where the railroad had
the stock,
the utility,
the industrial.
Water, repair shops, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And then on the other side, and there was a bridge that went over, was a section which was predominantly where the workmen lived. And most of them were Italian Catholics, Polish Catholics.
And
you know,
now
ethnic. Let's put ethnic.
The train doesn't go through, though. Oh, the train still goes through. Oh, everything. Okay, you said now something didn't go through. I wasn't quite certain what it was.
Well, the train still goes through. The tracks are still there. The tracks are still there, but it's not like it.
What?
They have torn, taken down, you know, the big buildings.
Oh.
You know, the fact, what would they be called? The
factory?
The industrial buildings. Okay. The industrial buildings.
Okay.
No longer there. So, there are other industries, of course, which have come into the town that I'm not familiar with anymore because I'm not there. But that was the article.
And again, what years were you in high school in Altoona, approximately?
1936.
Okay.
Because I graduated Pitt in 1940. Okay. 36, 37, 38, 39. Yeah, about 35, 1935. Yeah. And it was. It was an industrial town.
Is that the same time they had the article about McKeesport also? There was a big one about McKeesport.
Well, they were kind of
the same kind of
thing.
And where did the Jews live in the city, in the town? How far away from the town?
Oh, far away.
Far away.
They lived in an area that was called...
The hill, was it the hill or something?
No. They've moved from there. When we moved, we lived on Furnace Avenue, which was a very beautiful residential section.
Let's go to another subject. I was curious, you were Vice President of National Council of Jewish Women, so I wonder if there's anything that you'd like to say that happened during your vice presidency.
Well, I think that what happened during my vice presidency was the legislation that concerned women's rights to abortion. We spent time writing letters, educating the membership as to the needs for women to be aware of this legislation. Also, the battered woman... And this was just the beginning, actually, of the rights for women to plan their own health, their own destiny, their own work. We talked about women in the workplace, that women made less salaries than men. I think that year, or the 2 years that I was vice president, was... spent educating the membership, as to what was important in women's rights legislation.
Approximately what years were you vice president in June? Just an approximate guess.
Not too long ago. When was I president? Well, that you can find out,
yeah.
You know. I mean, that's no problem.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a record of that, you know. anyhow, we had speakers and on the legislation that was up, you know, to be considered. Abortion rights.
Did they work on anything about anti-Semitism at the time?
No, I don't think that was the big issue at that time. But, I mean, there was, you know, the waiting room at the courthouse, which was in existence at the time. But you asked what my particular, it was social action.
Oh, okay.
And I think that's the word we want to use there, social action.
Okay. You also mentioned that you worked in that preschool program. It was the beginning of integration. If you want to add anything about that, I seem to remember there were people who were against, well, there were a lot of people who were against integration at the time because they were integrating the school districts.
Yeah, but it had nothing to do with what I was doing.
Oh, okay.
It had nothing to do with that.
Okay.
I mean, that was just one facet, one program that was introduced because there was money coming in. And that was just one concept. The busing came you know, within that period of time, the programs for integration came within that period of time. But we had nothing to do with the issue of integration.
Do you think it was successful, the preschool program?
Was it successful? I think it was successful in that it's still existing. There's still preschools.
Yeah.
So that was the beginning of preschools, and the concept behind the preschool program was that if you could get children at that level to come together, that they would have a better understanding of each other's cultures and each other's needs and value systems, so that, oh, and also it would benefit them, bringing them into the school situation, maybe out of homes that did not have the adequate means of teaching or stimulating these children to have better education. Special buildings were put up, you know, these removable classrooms to house the school, to house the preschools. The children were given milk and meals, you know, food, and they had a teacher, trained teacher, and aides. So it was really a program that, well, it was a costly program, I guess you could say. I mean, the funding was there. Let's say it was a funded program. It was a funded program. And as far as I know, it's still, the preschools still exist. So it served that purpose.
Was, I seem to remember Mrs. Was Mrs. Aaron the president of the board then? I asked because I know she was Jewish. Were there any, do you know if there were any Jews on the school board at that time?
Oh, I'm sure there must have been. I can't tell you now. You know, it's been years, honey.
I can't remember names.
You know, I know that there was always Jews on every board. You know, they were there. They're always there.
They weren't there previously, though. There was a point at which they started coming, but I think...
Well, there was also that big issue of principles, Jewish principles, and don't put this down. I mean, don't write this down, but one of my friends, who today is one of my friends, got in on that under the, you know, under the line, became principal of Liberty School because she was Jewish and a woman. You know, these were issues. These were issues. There weren't any women principals. There weren't any Jewish principals. Harry Singer was the only, well, one of the only Jewish principals that I know, and he was principal of Westinghouse. Bill Fisher, who was an English teacher at Fifth Avenue High School, became the head of this preschool program. You know, I mean, this was all very intriguing stuff. You don't want to put that there.
That's the interesting thing. Those are the interesting things.
No, you
things.
Can't. You don't want to mention names. I don't think it's good to mention names. People, unless you ask them if it's okay.
Okay.
Who later became principal of Taylor Aldridge, incidentally.
Bill Fisher.
Yeah,
he was
Fisher.
Black. He's black. I just saw him recently, by the way.
He died.
He was in the hospital.
When? Bill Fisher. Long time ago. You thinking the same
I'm
man?
Thinking of another Mr. Fisher who was, he was...
Principal
of Taylor Aldridge. He's a black man.
He died.
I just saw him about a month ago when my husband was in the hospital.
He died years ago.
It has to be another, obviously another Bill Fisher.
Okay.
Or maybe his first name wasn't Bill, because I always called him Mr. Fisher.
Okay.
Okay. So there's, okay. The other thing I wanted to ask you, well, a couple more questions. If there's anything additional that you want to tell us about your when you were a docent at the museum, we did go through that.
Oh, I thought we
and
did.
And I thought it was so
I
interesting.
Think we, I told you that it was... A very select group.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And, of course, you had to have, I mean, There were many applicants, and maybe in 25 that were selected from the applicants, and I was selected, and I am very happy about that. And we went through a training period with Mrs. Dwyer, was the name of the woman who trained. She's dead. You don't have to put that down, I don't think. Or if you want to, that's okay. I mean, she's dead. They're all gone, my dear.
Well, these things are confidential.
They're all gone,
I mean,
my
nobody's going to know about these things until all these people are probably long dead.
She put us through a strenuous training session where we had to start. We started with Egypt, and we went Greco-Roman, and then we went to the Renaissance, and then we went, you know, through all the different art. What do you call them? Art.
History.
The history of art.
Who are some of the people that you remember, other than Mrs. Dwyer? Are there other people that you remember?
They were in the...
were either in the program or were instructing, or who were head of the art department then. Are there any people that stood out in your mind, other than Mrs. White?
I think... he just died, too.
Who was that?
Oh, dear. Arcus.
Leon Arcus. Yeah. Oh, he was very involved.
I think he was the... that was Leon Arcus at the time. I think he was administrator.
Some big wheel.
Curator or something.
Of the fine art department.
Did he the Museum of Art. I mean, the art
Museum
department.
The art department.
The art department.
Right.
Department
did he
Museum.
Ever speak to your group?
Oh, sure. Yeah. We've had a lot of people.
What was he like? Can you characterize him?
I knew him, but I certainly didn't know him on an intimate level.
Was he interesting?
Like most of
them. Interesting, then.
Yeah.
Okay, also, if there's anything that you didn't tell us about B'nai B'rith, you were also after them. Did I ask you that? I don't remember.
Yes, you did ask me
that.
Well, what can I tell you about B'nai B'rith? Well, I did tell you that B'nai B'rith women were instrumental in bringing the B'nai B'rith Hillel program for college students to the city. I did tell you that. I thought that was important, that we had seminars on anti-Semitism. That's what B'nai B'rith did.
Right, with ABM.
Bringing in speakers to talk about what the current happenings, current events. It was an all-day session. It was well attended. It was an educational process. I think we were very instrumental in educating our members about the Jewish community, about anti-Semitism, about the need for college students, the BBYO, the neighborhood youth organizations, which we sponsored and funded at the time. We would have mother-daughter functions on Mother's Day, and the men would have Father's Day, bringing in the AZAs. It was, I think I did say this, that it was a family-oriented organization, and that there was room for all ages. My husband was president of the B'nai B'rith Men's Council, and we would go to the conventions at the Concord, which I just talked about to somebody, where everybody would have to get dressed up because it was very elitist, and the banquets were outstanding in the not so much because of the food, which was, of course, plentiful and overabundant, but speakers would be brought in on politics, political issues, current events, outstanding people, really outstanding people. So it was an opportunity, actually, to hear directly, like a convention that we had in Washington, D.C., and we heard at that time Carter, who was running for president. And, I mean, it was very, very controlled in that there were security all over the place, and you had to have your badges on. And of course, we didn't know at that time that Carter would be the president. But we heard his political speech. And that's the caliber. That's the caliber of speech. We heard. I think we were very, very politically sophisticated because of hearing directly from the candidates. I don't know now whether that's true or not, because I haven't been to a convention, you know, in years and years, and the men and women no longer have conventions that are open to each other. They didn't have conventions together, but the conventions were open to both men and women if they wished to attend. And of course it was a wonderful experience because we were in Washington, D.C. and in different places.
Now they do it how? Now it's not?
I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know. See, the men have separated and the women have separated from the men.
Oh, it used to be together.
And no, they were not together. They worked together.
They worked together.
I mean, they had a common goal. And the common goal was all these programs that were sponsored by both the men and the women and funded, you know, large sums of money to support these projects. And then there was maybe 6, 8, 10 years ago, there was a change that took place, and the women broke away from the men and are no longer called B'nai B'rith Women, but Jewish Women International.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You know,
you didn't know that?
I hope you don't have this on.
Yeah.
You do have this on.
They're called Jewish Women's International rather than B'nai B'rith
Women. They're no longer called B'nai B'rith Women. They are now a separate organization.
Are you ready to leave?
No. Turn that on.
Okay, I wonder if there's anything that you would like to say about your husband, who also I know is very active, and I don't think, you told us a little bit about the organizations he was in, but if there's anything you just feel like saying that you think is important, now's your chance.
Well, he was a dentist for how many years?
Many years.
About 52 years.
How is dentistry different then than it is now when he first became a dentist?
when he first became a dentist, the prices were like $5 a filling.
You're right.
$5 a filling, and you had to put in a lot of filling. Right?
Before fluoridation.
I think everybody knows that answer. Dentistry, of course, has changed. When Sam was a dentist, he did all the dentistry, whether it was fillings or
and cleaning
or
gum.
I mean, he did everything but root canal. He did not do root.
He did caps.
Caps and gold and, you know, all that. Today's dentists don't do that. Everything now is I can't say not all dentists, but many, many dentists no longer do all the dentistry that send out to specialists. And I think that's true in medicine too. You know. Everybody now is a specialist.
Yeah.
So that's the difference, I think, in the health professions.
Did he enjoy it?
He loved it. He was a very good dentist, and his patients really liked him a lot. His patients were like friends, and he had a mix of people of all religions and ethnic groups. And just one incident, when Sam was ill, you know, he had a heart attack. When he had a heart attack, and a patient, or several of his patients, but one that particularly, and I'm sorry I didn't save the letter, wrote and asked me if it would be all right if she made a Nirvana.
I thought that was so beautiful.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, of course, you know, that's Catholic.
Yeah, right.
And I just thought that that was so touching.
He was very active in the B'nai B'rith.
And he was also president of the Alpha Omega, which is the Dental Society.
Mm-hmm.
He was chairman of the B'nai B'rith Hillel board. That was his main concern. He liked that. And that was the time when Richard Rubenstein. Remember Richard Rubenstein?
Yeah.
I
remember.
I knew girls.
Yeah.
She's
I'm
not
a
from
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay.
But I remember.
Yeah, Richard Rubenstein came to be interviewed. Sam interviewed him for the position of rabbi of the Hillel, the neighborhood Hillel. And we took him out for dinner, and he was Harvard. Dressed Harvard, talked Harvard, looked Harvard, and we were really impressed with Richard Rubenstein, and he is, and was, a brilliant, brilliant man, but also very controversial. And he was the one who wrote the God Is Dead book, very involved in the Holocaust, and was very opinionated as to what he wanted to talk about. And,
didn't he march in the...
Oh, yes.
During
yes.
The, yeah,
was, that was a... That
during
was
the
60s. The march...
What was it for civil rights.
Civil rights. The Civil Rights March.
When a lot of people were...
Took students with him.
Yeah.
And they...
A lot of students were hugged.
Down to march in as... Selma,
Alabama. Right. Wasn't it? Selma, right.
Alabama.
Did your
husband
ever work
with anybody? Did he have a partner in the ship, or did he work on his own? Did a lot of dentists at that time work alone? Because now there are so many. For the most part. I think when they began, you know, when they started their practices, later on taking in partners, or, you know, and Sam did. He never took in a partner. That he took in young men out of dental school that he had sponsored, and they worked in the office.
Was it as hard for Jews who wanted to be dentists going to Pitt Medical School?
Yeah, there was a quota.
There was a quota for dentists.
Oh, yeah, definitely a quota. So there weren't all that many, you know, coming out of Pitt,
mm-hmm.
Pitt Dental School. And Sam really, you know, he held a good position with the professors at dental school. Everybody respected him, respected the work that he did. And I told you the kind of patience he had and
wonderful.
The relationship that was so good. And
where was
he never retired.
He was very fast.
Yes. Excuse me. I thought that was a nice story.
Yeah, I think you did mention, but I'm not sure. Where did he practice? Where was his office?
The Park Building.
Sam was downtown. My dentist is there now.
Huh? Who's that? Salesman?
No, Feldman.
Or Feldman.
Yeah, Jules Feldman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there anything else you would like to say before we end this?
I don't know. If you have questions, I'll answer them.
I don't have any more questions. Well, thank you so much. It's been a really interesting interview.